Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. You're listening to America This Week.
Hi, welcome back. This is Kevin Clark. I'm here with Kerry Weber on America This Week. You're listening to Sirius XM Channel 129, the Catholic Channel. We are speaking with Professor Andrew Bacevich, who's telling us, talking about some of the errors we've made strategically over the years in the Middle East, particularly in Iraq. And we're taking your calls at 1-888-322-8465 if you have a question for Professor Bacevich. We've got Doug from Massachusetts on the line right now. Hello, Doug.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the topic. Yeah, clearly some errors have been made, and I think some not announced, like all the harnesses that were put on the military for engagement, and I guess the lack of fortitude to actually win a battle. But I'd like to know the professor's thoughts, and I guess yours, because you kind of lean that way, on America's, I guess, battle. Puerto Rico's a good example of the billions we've spent on poverty, you know, over decades, yet there's nothing to show for accomplishment. In fact, poverty levels have increased, so the war on poverty, the war in the Middle East. I'd like to know if you have those same kind of, thoughts on that.
Professor Bacevich, do you want to take that?
Oh, gosh. First of all, I'm not particularly competent to talk about how to eliminate poverty. And secondly, it just seems to me that we're dealing here with two utterly different phenomena. Ending poverty versus trying to pacify the greater Middle East are simply just two different issues.
Well, and it sure would be nice to have the $4 trillion that we apparently have committed to the Iraq war to spend on relieving poverty here in the United States. Doug, what's your feeling there?
Again, the question was, I wasn't asking for solutions to poverty. What I'm saying is he spoke of a decade's war in the Middle East, and I said we've had over four decades or five now of poverty, and you look at Puerto Rico, 70% of the population now, and it's in the news this week, is on some type of welfare government assistance, what have we in America? We spend billions. We give out more meal plans to people, the government's involved, I guess, involvement in wars, whether it be on poverty or militarily, just don't seem to function quite as well as a private sector.
Well, you know, I guess people aren't starving to death because they're on these government programs. In fact, the lowest level of poverty in the United States was achieved in 1972, arguably when the war on poverty was ended by President Richard Nixon. We were down to 11%, and now we've creeped back up. And I think that rate will parallel the diminishing commitment to these anti-poverty programs. But I think, Doug, if we could, we'd like to return the conversation to the Iraq situation and the international affairs. I don't think we're going to be able to resolve the poverty problem today on the show. But thank you for your question. Do we have any no other callers? Okay, Professor Bacevich. You were talking about, in a recent article in Salon, you talked about sort of where we are now with Iraq and that sort of that Iraq is no longer a reality. You know, we keep talking about sending troops on the ground to fix Iraq, but in the reality in the field is that Iraq is sort of separating itself. Where do you think this is heading? Is Iraq as a going concern, as a federated republic, are we in the end game now?
Well, I'll peer into my crystal ball.
Well, and you know, in terms of Kurdistan,
I think I'll find it pretty cloudy. I mean,
yeah.
The notion that I think it's highly unlikely that we'll end up with the sort of cohesive nation state in Iraq that the George W. Bush administration thought that it was going to create. Mm-hmm. If Iraq survives, it's probably going to survive as some sort of a loose confederation. That is to say that the authority exercised from Baghdad will probably be fairly limited, maybe confined to things like foreign affairs and territorial security, and that the different sectarian communities will exercise very considerable authority over all other matters. That's what I would guess. But more to the point, I think here, the more pressing question for us is, how do we get even that solution? Mm-hmm. And the Obama administration, I don't think President Obama is particularly enthusiastic about edging toward a increasing U.S. military involvement in Iraq, but the fact is that's what he's doing. I think the larger question would be, is there any alternative to that? And my view is that if we surrender the notion that nothing can happen unless the United States makes it happen, perhaps we could consider the possibility that actors within the region are better situated to deal with the problem of the moment, and the problem of the moment is ISIS or the Islamic State.
Yeah, could you talk a little bit about its current status in Iraq?
The current status
of ISIS.
Well, I mean, this is an entity that has vast ambitions. I mean, the leader of ISIS has already declared that he is a caliph and presides over a new caliphate that in his wild imaginations is going to ultimately encompass the entire Islamic world. I don't think we need to take those ambitions all that seriously, except as indication of a certain megalomania. In terms of a military threat, the threat is real and is particularly real with regard to those in the region. It's not particularly ISIS poses no particular threat with regard to the United States of America. You know, when you think about it, they don't have a navy, they don't have an air force, they've got a relatively small army that is not particularly well equipped. They are vile. They are vicious. ISIS fighters are willing to fight and die for their cause. In contrast, it's not evident that Iraqi soldiers are all that willing to fight and die for their country. So the threat is a threat to Iran. It's a threat to Saudi Arabia. It's a threat to Jordan. And my point there is that countries within the region that do face a real threat in the form of ISIS have a greater incentive than we do to deal with that threat. And so what we should be doing is try to find ways to facilitate efforts by local actors to deal with the problem.
Now, does that mean helping the Saudis and the Iranians come to some sort of détente in the region so that they can work together against ISIS?
I think the answer is yes, although for you and I to sort of say that here talking on the radio, that sounds like a heck of an achievement. But I would phrase it somewhat more modestly, and that is to persuade the Iranians or to suggest to the Iranians and to the Saudis that in terms of their near-term interests, it might make sense for them to at least postpone temporarily their concerns about one another and to deal with the problem that is immediately at hand, mm-hmm. and that's ISIS. And there, too, I think we get into the question of, well, given the fact that we don't even have any diplomatic relations with Iran, and indeed our relationship with Iran since the Islamic Revolution has been a hostile one, should we even consider trying to facilitate Iranian efforts against ISIS? I think the answer is yes. Facilitate might mean, for example, providing intelligence. That doesn't mean that the Iranians are good guys or our friends. In World War II, when we made common cause with Joseph Stalin against Nazi Germany, didn't mean that Joseph Stalin was our friend or that we shared any values with the Soviet Union other than a common interest in dealing with the greater threat of Nazi Germany.
How do you think the role of weaponry, of U.S. weaponry being given to Iraqi troops plays a role in that stabilization process or destabilization process? I know recently, you know, we've seen headlines about anti-tank missiles being sent to Iraq to help fight ISIS, but ISIS themselves also have U.S. military equipment that was taken from the Iraqi troops.
Right. So we have spent the last several years attempting to build an effective Iraqi army. And that effort has taken different forms. You know, we try to provide training and advice, and we also provide equipment. And the result up to the present moment has been that the failures of the Iraqi army on the battlefield, sometimes very egregious failures, end up with the equipment basically being transferred to ISIS. And one of the most troubling recent developments is that ISIS has employed the up-armored Humvee, meaning that big Jeep-like vehicle but protected with armor, has been using an up-armored captured American Humvees as a vehicle to deliver a suicide bomber to his target. And the American response to that has been to say, well, let's now give the Iraqis anti-tank weapons that they will be able to use to destroy the captured American up-armored Humvees. And my point would be that I get the logic, I understand that, but the deeper irony of providing them with American weapons to destroy American equipment ought to at least give us a little bit of pause and again, try to think more deeply about the predicament in which we find ourselves.
And that's sort of reminiscent of the CIA's operation to recover Stinger missiles that they had given to the Mujahideen in Afghanistan and during that struggle with the Soviet Union. So we seem to be repeating our cycles of mistakes here in the region.
Well, there's at least some rhymes that one can detect. Yes, I agree.
You know, is there one thing that you wish that most Americans knew about the situation in Iraq that you think gets overlooked quite a bit?
Well, I think it's the narrative. It's the larger story. Mm-hmm. I wish Americans had a greater appreciation of the history of the United States military in the Islamic world since 1980. I wish that Americans would have an awareness of how many times we have intervened, directly or indirectly, an appreciation of what those interventions have cost, not simply cost us, but cost the people who are there when we intervene. And I wish they had a greater appreciation of what all that has achieved. You know, whether we would say our purposes have been to bring stability or to eliminate evil or to spread democracy or to advance the cause of women's rights, however you want to describe our purposes going back to 1980, it seems pretty evident to me that we haven't achieved those purposes. And I think sadly, we've actually tended to make things worse. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wish Americans would appreciate, so that then when some member of Congress gets up on the Senate floor and says, oh, boots on the ground, that's the answer to ISIS, that Americans would be in a better position to evaluate that recommendation and put it in a larger context.
When you were in the military yourself, did you have these misgivings about the use of force and you know, the orders you were being given, or did this all come to you later in looking at the sort of tortured history here?
Oh, I've had my own journey, mm-hmm. own intellectual journey, and by the way, it's been a heck of a long time since I was in the Army, but I think most people who were in the military would acknowledge that that. To become a soldier is to undergo a very powerful socialization process. I suspect it's not all that much different than becoming a religious, you know, becoming a priest, going through the long process of preparation for ordination. I don't think that process is one that necessarily encourages critical thinking. It tends to encourage, I think, subordination to existing institutional arrangements and principles. And perhaps if you're going to have a church and if you're going to have an army, that process of socialization is necessary in order to maintain the integrity of the institution itself. But I had to get away from the army in order to begin thinking more critically about U.S. military policy.
And I think the Pope, Pope Francis, talks about the problem of clericalism as something that we have to be aware of and struggle against. And perhaps that's something the people in the military who are doing our long-term planning need to take into consideration as well.
Yeah, I think it's a good thought.
Well, thank you so much, Professor Bacevich. We really appreciate your insights on this. We appreciate your time. And coming up next, we're going to be speaking with Ellen Bogle about the recent rulings in the Supreme Court. I'm Carrie Weber. I'm here with Kevin Clark. You're listening to America This Week on Sirius XM 129.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.